Welcome to Dread, Fright, and Brew, where your favorite horror movies are paired with craft brews and ciders from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Your hosts this evening are Aaron Hatfield, Grace Schrick, and Lee Despain. Fear goes better with beer.
So the fish thing, and then the orca thing, and then the god thing, and then the everything. It was like 17 minutes before we came back to the film, and like it was pretty hilarious.
These clouds came down from
outer
space.
That's exactly what happened.
Okay, but anyway, about these clowns that came down from outer space and sucked people's juices.
I really want you guys to know about the.
Although that's that's a little insight into our listeners, into our psyches. Our listeners want to hear this stuff.
Apparently, our psyches are stuck on a loop.
Yeah, our listeners, right?
Yes.
Like we even have a listener yet.
We have no listeners yet because we're just starting this business. So speaking of starting this business, what are we watching? What are we watching tonight?
I'm going to watch some Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
I totally forgot
for a I thought she was just laughing. Cause
no, I was like, I can't think of the name of the movie.
Because it's that funny of a movie.
No, it is that funny of a movie, but I totally forgot the name.
If you forget again, it's playing right over here to our left.
Tucker and Dale, right?
You can have a look right over there.
Tucker and Dale.
And remind
Dale
yourself. And Tucker. So Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Well, I hope I get through this without sounding like a complete doof because of my cold. I'm just I feel like I've got one monotone.
I was gonna say, is that really why you sound like a doof? Because sorry, dude.
I didn't ask to be born. I'm just saying, I gotta work with what I have.
Yeah, that's true.
So, ooh,
I need beer.
Opening beers. So, we're gonna drink what tonight?
Dynamic Duo double IPA from Ex Novo. They're over in Northeast Portland.
That's a nice, nice.
It is nice.
The word I was looking for.
I'm you're trying to say the color
pairing. That's beer? A nice pairing. Pairing for the movie we're watching.
It's a perfect pairing.
That's it.
Dynamic duo. There hasn't really been in recent memory a more dynamic duo in a horror film than Tucker and Dale. It's almost flawless. I mean, the chemistry these guys have in this film and the caliber of both of their acting and the comedic talents they bring to this role. And I don't know, I could go on and sound like a total tool, but it's just hilarious.
Well, you've got some two of the solid leads there in the acting world with Alan Tudyk, of course, from Serenity, from Firefly, from Knight's Tale, from many other things. He's fantastic. One of the things that I think is going to be really hard about talking about this movie is the spoilers of it. Because right out of the gate, part of what makes this movie super enjoyable is the way that they address the content of it and who's evil, who's good, who's bad, where the perceptions are.
For sure. And I think most people that are either listening to a podcast talk about this film or watching teasers of it on YouTube or whatnot, I think most people are at least aware of the basics, that this is a total flip on its head of an entire, I don't know if you'd say an entire genre, but a subgenre of horror for sure, which is that hillbilly horror, the crazed backwoods, axe-wielding chainsaw maniacs. So I think there's going to be a certain amount of assumption of where the film's going, but it really does take some very established tropes and cliches of horror and doesn't just turn them on their head, but it does so in such a funny way that it almost doesn't seem like they're trying to do anything.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. It's natural feeling, and it doesn't and it's new. It's new. You don't see a lot of that in some of the horror movies, at least the modern ones. But this has kind of got a real new feel to it.
Totally. Yeah, we've got a lot of modern horror movies that are referential, very self-referential of the horror genre, where they're almost poking fun at themselves. You have The Shaun of the Dead, you've got Cabin in the Woods, Behind the Mask, Rise and Fall of Leslie Vernon, which is awesome. All of those are great. All of those show horror from like the other side. It's like, hey, what's behind the smoke and mirrors? What's behind the curtain? You know, and you get to see the great Oz kind of working those films. But I think Tucker and Dale, as far as I'm aware, at least the films that I've seen, is the only one that just switches roles so flawlessly. Or does it?
Well,
did it switch any roles at all, or are we just seeing a different protagonist and a different antagonist? You
have
a
different perspective of what's going on. And then, you know, we were talking about earlier, could this apply to, you know, Jason and all of those other guys where, you know, well, were they really the bad guy, or do they just have a bunch of idiots running around?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Jason Voorhees, he'd drown in a lake because camp counselors were off having sex. So he's got a reason to be angry. But I would say...
he's a victim.
I would say that he still might be the bad guy.
Oh, no, he's definitely still the bad guy.
Because...
but it could be argued
he goes all the way to New York to punch people's heads off.
He's devoted to his craft.
That's true. That's true. He does put in the time. Hey, I want to go back a second. So you mentioned Alan Tudyk. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, I actually had to do Google searches and YouTube searches to find out how to pronounce his last name.
Oh,
because yeah. It just doesn't feel right calling him Tudyk.
That's exactly how it's pronounced.
Jealous? So I went to his... No, I'm okay with my one. It's the size of two. Oh, okay. It's fine. But I actually went to his Twitter feed.
Look how his shirt's coming off now.
And read it from his mouth where he responded to a fan that had tweeted him and said, "How do you say your name?" And he said, "It's two dicks," just like that. So anyways, I was very cautious.
Yeah, because it's I think it's spelled T-Y...
T-U-D-Y-K.
T-U-Y, yeah. So I always try to do like a tie duck.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Try to make myself more comfortable.
Don't make it fancy.
So that you don't make fun of the poor guy by his name. Definitely such an awesome actor. I mean, Wash, his character in Firefly, was probably the most beloved character in Firefly for a lot of people. And one of the most tragic, ultimately. But for me, he's going to always be Steve the Pirate from Dodgeball.
Yes, Dodgeball.
Steve the Pirate.
Yep. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a dodgeball. What else do they say? You know, there's a line in that movie where I think it's been cut out, but he said, "You're about as useful as a dick-flavored lollipop."
I think I do remember
that. Popsicle. But I have not heard that in any recent showings of that. And I'm not talking just like
on
regular
TV.
On HBO or whatever.
Yeah, we should find that out.
Weird insults on Dodgeball.
This beer is really good. So obviously
beer, man.
Our movie that we've got paired with our beer. Let's discuss this beer here for a second. This is Ex Novo. As Grace said, they're here in Portland in the Northeast area, and they just had their
third anniversary.
I want to say like a month or two ago.
Yeah, they opened on in July of 2014. So yeah, just last month.
That's awesome. So for any of you guys not completely familiar with Ex Novo, they started with a very unique business model, at least in the world of craft beer, which is that brainchild of this, Joel Gregory, he decided he wanted to have 100% nonprofit brewery and give back to causes that affect positive change, especially charities that affect children. I notice he has chosen Mercy Corps, Friends of Children, a couple other ones. But incredible idea to take something that was on the beginning verge of the bubble, I mean really on a climb, and say, hey, I could get into this and make a metric shit ton of money, or I could get into this and do something good.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
They're the only nonprofit brewery that I know of, at least stateside.
I know
there might be other ones internationally, but I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's copied his model, but I know he was the first.
Yeah,
as far as I'm aware.
I can't even wrap my head around that. How does that even happen?
He donates 100% of his profits.
Yeah, wow. they keep so just enough to brew the next batches and pay the employees, of course.
Shit. That's doing it for the love of the craft, man.
Yeah, and you want to talk about a place that has happy employees. Also,
oh my gosh, everyone loves working there. And they've all been there forever.
Yeah.
Which is unheard of in the beer industry.
I think you introduced me to Ex Novo, actually. I think we went down there one time.
We did like ecliptic and Ex Novo on the same trip.
Did a little little tour. I think that's where wasn't that where we had the pint of bacon?
Yes,
beer for, bacon for the table.
Bacon for the table. To bring out a pint glass and they fill it with bacon.
I got to tell you, that probably attracted me to them first before even the thought of a new place for great beer or a new place with a great business model. I think it was just seeing, oh, and we're going to have a pint glass full of bacon.
Yeah, and all of their food is really good. They also do these ridiculous little donut sliders with fried chicken in them.
Oh, I have not had that.
Hungover is like the greatest snack in the entire world.
But what do you mean it's an actual donut?
The bun is a chicken. Freaking donut with like chicken. They're little sliders. Huh.
Yeah, these guys are rapidly becoming like my top interest.
They're really smart.
So cool. It's such a cool place. And the thing is that you can be a great company with, you know, doing great things for your community and other people and all of that, but have mediocre beer. And you'd probably still be fairly successful because people would want to just support your ideal. But the fact that they're pumping out like some of the best beer in the Portland area, which is saying a lot considering how much beer is pumped out here. It blows me away that they're doing all of that, that they're making these just iconic brews, and they're giving that money to charity. It's completely unbelievable. Actually, also, they just had to change. I think they kind of got some pressure from the Oregon DOJ to change their business model because it was beer. There was some kind of, I'm getting this all from like around town talk and then a little bit from their blog and some other sources, but there was some kind of pressure applied or at least casual suggestions from the Oregon government that they needed to become an actual LLC kind of company. But they did that as what they, I guess, call a benefit company. So you can still be, you can still on paper look like you are attempting to make all the profits in the world and that you're money hungry and you're all going after it like any other business does and should, because that's why you go into business. But you can then turn around and give all that money away and not suffer tax repercussions and all the other stuff, the same as if you were a nonprofit. So
yeah.
So it's kind of like an anti-church.
Apparently, yes. Yeah.
Which I can get behind.
Yeah. Regardless, he's killing it. I think he was a home brewer also.
He was. Yeah, he started home brewing. Started kind of as a mishmash in a garage in 2012.
Okay.
They actually opened up their actual brewing facility in 2014. So, I mean, he's been doing this for a while, and basically his whole mentality is beer brings people together. And so why not do that and then also do something even better from it. So their whole thing is drink beer, do good, be awesome.
Hmm. Oh, that's cool. I hadn't heard that before.
That's their mission. That's their, yeah, drink beer, do good.
Huh. I'm down for at least two of those things.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, I'm down to drink beer and
be awesome.
Be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing good.
It's a little work in the middle there.
Yeah, it's so hard. I don't want to put in all that effort.
Doing good generally means a certain amount of acts of selflessness. That's a tough one.
Oh, yeah. That's not me. That's not me. Sorry, listeners. I'm a little selfish.
All those wasted years, man. I was a home brewer way back, and I could have done something with it. Now all of these
you could have garage been a
home brewer. I know, right? I could have, like, led the charge right out of the gate.
So you're scared of hops.
You know what? Yeah, I got some opinions already about the fact that you guys put another IPA in front of me.
Yes. Oh, not just an IPA.
No.
A double
IPA. Yeah, what is the stats on this one? About eight, I think?
Eight.
Yep, oh, is it eight even? Well, what a guess.
Mm-hmm. Although it's pretty nice.
It is. The one that we're drinking, by the way, and I guess we'll explain why there are more than one of these, but the one we're drinking right now is Project 18.
Mm-hmm. The hazy edition.
Mm-hmm.
They've been brewing this dynamic duo, double IPA, since 2015. But when they first created this, the attempt was to use two different hops each time so that you would get that different flavor profile, different aroma profile. And they did that every batch they made. It had two different hops. And so you can imagine if you're going through batches of this fairly quickly, that becomes pretty confusing and almost overwhelming for someone that wants to have it twice.
Yeah.
And so that's no longer actually what they're doing with this one. As of batch 15, they will now be brewing it the same for 3 months at a time and then changing up the two hops. And they will also indicate that on the label so that you can count up with them. So now I just need Untappd to get on board and start posting all these as different beers because I want all those.
They are totally different beers. We were drinking batch 17 earlier because we ended up with a bottle of that too, which was Citra and Lemon Drop hops.
Super dry.
Super dry. A lot more botanical and herbal aromas.
Almost ginny.
A little bit ginny, yeah. It was good, but it was a completely different IPA. And then this one, batch 18, the hazy one, looks completely different in the glass, but is the Azaka and Citra hops. So it's all just juicy, tropical.
Yeah, it looks like a New England IPA. It's mm-hmm. got the great haze, that great orange color. It had the, you know, that perfect kind of 3/8 inch head on there when we poured it. It had all the look of that, but it still tastes Northwest inspired to me.
Yeah, you still have that little bit of kind of that piney bite. Where it's not all just citrus.
Yeah, and not so bad, which is a big thing that I...
Not so bad.
a lot of people love that in IPAs. And for me, it's a good IPA for me. A good IPA for me is something that doesn't really celebrate that bite and that bitterness. This one here hits some sweet notes, some grapefruit and some orange that I mm-hmm. really, really like.
Definitely. Well, I think that's one of the reasons that this can work out really well. And by this, I mean our podcast here is that we've got three varying tastes as far as our palates here. And they overlap in some places and in other places they don't.
We will argue to the death.
Yeah, for sure. But I think that's going to be awesome. I think it's awesome that we got to choose this cool beer and talk about it and know that when others go and try it, they may try this one or they may try a different one. But regardless, it's going to be fantastic. I mean, this Ex Novo beer is just really, really good.
Yeah, I think we're going to have better luck picking beers that are good and appealing to a lot of different people than we are, say, the movie. Because sometimes, you know, we're going to have a movie that is just, you know, might be just terrible and everybody has their own tastes. But I think we're going
to... But at least you have a beer to drink.
Yeah, at least you got a beer to
drink. Totally. This is not that movie, by the way. This movie is almost universally loved. Critics love it. Fans love it. It doesn't have an overabundance of anything that would turn people off. Some people get turned off by too much gratuitous violence, too much gore, you know, too much torture, too much humor even sometimes. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, some purists don't want comedy. What do they call it? Not rom-com. Horror comedy. I don't know. I think there's a name for it.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably. We'll make one up and get it back to you guys later.
So why this beer? Why this beer for Tucker and Dale?
I liked this beer because dynamic duo, and like I was saying at the beginning, I really can't imagine a more dynamic duo. A movie, horror movies are not normally driven by two characters.
That's true.
You normally have a final girl, or you have a tormented soul that lives in the big, you know, haunted house. Or you might have a huge cast of characters, but it's only so that each one of them can be killed off in turn until you have weeded down to that one person who's really the star of the show. I love this because it's all the fun of a buddy cop movie. It's all the fun of an Abbott and Costello. I mean, it mm-hmm. borders on slapstick at times. At other times, it's super witty and very intelligent writing. And I think that that's what made me think Dynamic Duo is a great beer for this. And actually, the recommendation came from Grace's man, Juan.
Well, that's true.
This was his idea.
This was all him.
Yeah, we were sitting at Northwest IPA not long ago thinking, hey, you know, what's the beer? What's the film pairing going to be? Trying to come up with one for this episode. And he looked over his shoulder and was like, hey, Dynamic Duo could work for Tucker and Dale. And it blew my mind. I thought, oh, yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah, well, I mean, and in the movie, they're drinking quite a bit of PBR. So, you know. An IPA, PBR, yes. It's pretty much the same in my taste buds, so I think it's fitting.
Tucker and Dale drink a lot of beer.
This made Grace's toes curl.
The other reason I really like it is I love the fact that I've seen Tucker and Dale versus Evil now probably, gosh, I don't know, a dozen times or more. And each time I see it, I notice a new little in-joke or I notice another nod to a different horror movie. But it always seems to have something new for me. And there's very few films that are like that. Some films I watch over and over and over again because I want it to be the same. Like if I'm watching, you know, the original Halloween, it's because I've got it memorized and I just want them to tell me that story again. I'm not expecting to see anything new.
Yeah.
But if I'm watching a Cabin in the Woods or something like that, I need it to have something fresh when I come back to it. You know, even things like Return of the Living Dead, other comedies in that way, there's usually a different take or a different feeling that you have. And so Tucker and Dale has been that way for me. And so to have this beer be different every time we come back to drink it, or at least every 3 months, I think also was a really cool tie-in.
You're making almost too much sense. That's pretty spot on. It will
never happen again.
Control yourself, son.
But yeah, we definitely don't want to just, you know, pair our beers by name and go, ha-ha, look how clever we are. We searched the beer aisle and found a name. Like, it needs to mean something to us. Hopefully it means something to, you know, our listeners. But that's at least where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
What did we just miss here? Because just a second ago,
yes,
we have an off what mic?
Hey, I control, individual. I control off mic. Myself.
Deanne here.
Yes, this is my lady Deanne. She is sitting in the room with us here, and Deanne has a remarkable ability to take a beer that I absolutely love, you know, at least a beer that I'm just enjoying, and I'll hand it over to her and she'll have a sniff and she will have a sip and then she will basically ruin my reality by telling me what she thinks of it. And she's spot on.
Yeah. We've, affectionately come to call it the Deanne.
It's Deanne's dose of reality
is what
we're going to call this moment. And this is where we call her over to the table to try the beer and have a sniff of the beer. She's like the truffle hog that goes in the woods and can smell them out. That sounded worse than I meant it.
But you just called your lady a truffle
hog. But what I'm saying is, and then, you know, she gets in there and then you try it and you go, this is a disgusting mushroom. What's going on with this?
Yeah, and you can't argue with her. Her calls are spot on.
It's always right. So anyways, let's go over to
what Grace was laughing at.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was an interaction here.
Big whiff, and I went, she just gagged again.
Slight vomiting motion.
Yeah, my lady's also not a fan of the IPAs.
No, I don't like IPAs, and this IPA is really strong, and the smell of it is pine needles that have been stored inside of a diaper for too long.
Okay.
All right, hold on here.
How are you supposed to store pine needles in a diaper?
Also, I was wondering, do they smell better if they're only in there a short time?
Can we qualify too long?
Not, you're drinking it again, I'm impressed. Because I saw the gag face as well. Cringe.
Oh, you know what? Right. I absolutely smell that diaper. I smell that diaper now. I hate it when she does that.
It's the same. It's the diaper and the pine needles with a touch of apricot pit.
Okay.
That's the taste of the
flavor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's still pine needles, with diapers.
But with an apricot nestled in the middle of the diaper.
A slight tease of apricot pit.
Which may have passed into the diaper because I don't think you can digest those. Especially not if you're a little baby. All right, well, there you go. Don't let any of that dissuade you. She's going to pop
delicious.
Up like that in every episode and try to ruin our beers for us.
Yeah. She doesn't hate this movie.
You know what? You've got to have some...
No, she loves it.
Any great script, you know, has tension. You know, any great couple in the world, you know, has that...
Well, Deanne's dose of reality definitely brings it.
So she needs to come in here and just shake things up a little bit and add a certain quality.
Yeah, I thought Grace here was going to fucking blow a gasket because as soon as Deanne took a whiff of that.
Yeah, I was trying to get my speech about movie sound and Halloween and why I chose this beer and everyone's laughing.
I was struggling, but I tried not to ruin your speech about Halloween.
I appreciate that.
It's very important to you.
I'm going to step away because I feel a coughing fit coming on here. I'm just going to be in the background
making some things.
Yeah, I totally came back from my vacation infected.
But I think all of us here at the table can agree this Ex Nova beer is awesome. To be quite honest, a lot of their beers are really, really awesome.
I love this brewery because they can do everything from a Mexican lager to an IPA to sours to they do a barley wine with moonstruck chocolates. Like, they do everything. And they do it all really well.
For sure. I mean, Elliot is probably one of the Portland area's so best. Well, I'm not going to say probably. It is. It's one of the Portland area's best IPAs, hands down. Their new Juicy Edition they just did recently was even better.
A lot of that.
Yes. Cactus Wins the Lottery.
Yeah.
Also an amazing, amazing
beer. Crazy Little Berliner Weiss with Prickly Pear Cactus.
So good.
Because why not?
So awesome. So check them out. If you guys haven't checked them out, get yourself some Ex Novo. They bottle quite a few beers.
They do.
You can find them at most reputable bottle shops.
They bottle a seasonal line of 22s, which is where Cactus Wins the Lottery comes in. And then they do, you know, different ones in that series. Dynamic Duo, I think, is pretty much year-round now. And then they have four-pack tall boys of Elliot IPA and the Mexican Lager. Mexican lager. I can talk today. So they do a lot of really cool stuff. And then they do some smaller 500 milliliter bottles of some of their specialty stuff, like their anniversary beers and things like the barley wines and all that kind of fun stuff.
That's awesome. I haven't dug into many of the specialties at all. Just the ones they've had on tap when I went by. But
I've pretty much drank everything they've made.
Awesome. There's nothing wrong with that.
I drink everything that... the time in the world is made.
But you can put that
I'm
down.
I'm getting there.
When that day almost happens, you'll what?
I think my liver will give out.
Shrivel away and die.
No, at that day, she'll open her own brewery and just start producing more.
That's
ooh.
True.
Well, then I'll get to working.
And Grace can write all this beer drinking down as research and you know, work
this
related.
Is resume building.
Yeah. Grace over here works at one of our local beer slinging establishments, and has actually been written up
IPA.
In the
poor.
Who was that in the Mercury?
Well, that week.
Well, that week, did a little write up on her amazing selection and how awesome it was. So you can trust Grace when she tells you something is worth going down and hunting out.
I am a colossal beer nerd.
So yeah, we've talked about how funny this darn thing is. We've talked a little bit about Alan Tudyk, but he's not. I mean, there is a leading man out of this duo, and I think that has to swing to Dale, played by a guy who I really didn't know from.
I didn't either. I had to look him up.
Anything.
At first, I thought he was Robert Kirkman, because he has that look to him.
Sure.
I was like, what? Was Robert Kirkman doing movies back in the day?
So Dale is played by Tyler Labine, who has had some small parts. I think his first, or at least his, I guess, better known... feature film role was a Canadian film called Control Alt Delete. I only know this because I saw him talking about it in an interview I was watching, in which he says he has sex with computers.
Oh.
And so I thought, well, that's kind of interesting.
It's called the internet.
I wonder that's what I was thinking. Like, right. Oh, is this like a, is this an AI movie where someone builds a sex robot or something? But no, I went and actually looked up some clips of this, and he literally like cuts holes in and inserts bubble wrap in.
I'm glad he at least puts the bubble wrap in.
Go on.
Cut your
and has
shit.
Sex with computers. So anybody who's desperately hungry to see a large, cuddly man bear have sex with a computer device, Control-Alt-Delete, it's called.
That's super weird.
Yeah, go find it. Other than that, he was a voice in Monsters University, I see.
Yep.
He had a part in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. But I think what will get most people excited, not me, this is probably where I differ with a lot of folks, but he's going to be in Super Troopers 2 that I guess is coming.
I'm concerned about that because I love Super Troopers.
See, I'm not concerned because I didn't like it.
Did you watch it sober?
Possibly.
That's a trick question.
It might be.
That's
your
problem.
It's a prop.
Well, I was just sitting there trying to think if I've watched anything sober ever.
Well, it could be a problem. Yeah. If you watch that movie sober, it's awful. But if you have at least a few beers or other fun things.
Yeah. Humor gets to a certain level of lowbrow.
Right now?
Once it drops right below that level, I cease enjoying it so much. Like, I can't watch any of the scary movie stuff. I can't watch any
like
of those parody
but Super
things.
Troopers I like.
Just, all right.
I don't know why.
Well, I'll give part two a chance just because I want to see Dale.
I'm concerned about it because Super Troopers was hilarious, and I think in the second one they might try too hard.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Which happens with a lot of sequels. Yeah. So I'm a little leery.
Those same guys did that Club Dread thing, right? Because I tried watching that too, and that also was not for me. I think it was something Lizard, Lonely Lizard or something. I don't know. I don't pay that close. I don't know. It's on the internet.
You can one of the things that is a concern with like part two. There's actually been talking sort of some production. No, not production, but some back and forth about part two to Dale and Tucker versus Yale.
Oh.
Which I think Buzz started back in like maybe 2012 or something like that.
Oh, wow. It took a while for this movie to get going. It was filmed in 2009.
Yeah, sat.
Stuck on a shelf and wasn't released until December 2011. So it sat for almost 3 years with no release and then was released and was immediately acclaimed. I mean, people loved it and accepted it right from the get-go. So I wonder if it had been released at the time it was filmed, if that would have changed its reception, you know, what would it have been coming out against or anything. So I'm just happy it came out at all because it's freaking hilarious.
Yeah, it's rare that I – well, not rare, but it's not often that that movie that we talk about I haven't seen, and I haven't seen this one. I saw bits and pieces of it. I knew of it, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of a campy, you know, spoof on the horror genre, whatever. I've seen Scary Movie. I've seen, you know, blah, blah, blah. But no, this is absolutely something completely different. And
I'm not going to admit how many times I've seen this movie.
Yeah, no, fell in love with it right away.
So Tucker and Dale, two hillbillies. I mean, to call them lovable hillbillies would not be an overreach at all. They're so endearing. You like them immediately when you see them.
Yeah. Or do you?
Well, not if you're a college kid.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
they're scary.
Yeah, they give the typical impression right out of the beginning.
The very first time we see them, yes, I think there's a group of college kids, eight college kids. Mm-hmm. They're driving down a West Virginia road. They're heading out into the woods. They're going to get some camping done. They're going to get a little weed smoking done. Opening. And they're going to get a little drinking done, only they forgot to bring their beer.
Rookie mistake.
That's one of the scenes that I knew when this movie was going to be, because they were driving, these college kids were driving, and they weren't paying attention. They were smoking some weed, and they almost hit the hillbilly truck, and they swerved away, and they're like, oh, wow, you know, whatever. And then the hillbillies caught up with them, and you're like, oh, shit, here we go. So they drove by and they were very scary looking and they were glaring at the college kids and the college kids were like, oh, wow, look at those, you know, backwater hillbillies. Weren't really particularly concerned. And then the hillbillies drove away and then some chick pops up in the back of the truck and says, oh, my God, guys, we forgot the beer. And then that's when they screamed. that's when they were frightened. So I guess fear does go better with beer, apparently.
Fear will always go better with beer.
So I knew right at that point, I was like, yeah, this movie's got something a little different going on.
For sure. It's going to be a little lighter and a different take. And the next time we see everybody, well, Tucker and Dale, we should talk about where they're headed. So they have just, Tucker, I believe, has just purchased his dream vacation home in the mountain woods of West Virginia. And they have loaded their cooler and truck with some brewskis and the fishing poles, and they're going to go and hang out and have some, as he hilariously says, some man time together.
Good Lord. We can talk about every single one of these scenes in this movie.
Oh, you really
could. It's just fucking brilliant. Each part of this movie can be broken down into just gold.
For sure.
One of the things that I think was really cool is kind of what you would expect. They show up at their new vacation home. It's dilapidated. It's, you know, it's your typical, like, evil cabin, your evil dead cabin in the woods, and they look at it and they're like, huh, and they call this a fixer-upper? You know, it's perfect.
Yeah, they love it.
It's got a dose of serial killer going on with the newspaper and the teeth hanging and the weird bones. And
yeah, he says,
an archaeologist
must have lived here. They're totally in love with this place. It looks like two shades down from even the cabin in Evil Dead.
Yeah, because they bought it sight unseen. I'm
that's the way they made it seem, yeah. You know, broken down half a truck in the front yard and Yeah, this thing is full of animal bones and clippings that talk about this spate of murders and missing people that's happened in this area. And the ominous music begins as we begin to scan these clippings of the just horrors that have happened here. And they come upon a clipping to which they're very excited.
They're very excited about it. Like freaking
free hot dog or something ridiculous. Yeah,
buy one, get one free chubby dog. No expiration.
Yeah, chubby dogs.
And amidst all of this horror of humanity's, you know, they've got a free coupon for an extra hot dog.
Definitely. And the setting is so perfect. I mean, the hillbilly horror thing has been, it's been done. And it's been done well a few times, and it's been done, you know, a little less well. But you've got, I mean, if you go back far enough, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I think, fits. It's not in Appalachia, but man, is it some white trash
hillbilly.
Sure. Yeah, and, you know, the fact that they're taking some folk who are just passing through and doing these terrible things. You've got, from 1981, both Don't Go in the Woods and Just Before Dawn. Which I know are both iconic. I honestly can't remember ever having watched either of those, so I'm putting those on my short list because I want to check those out. Hills Have Eyes, Redneck Zombies, Wrong Turn.
Ooh, yeah, Wrong Turn. That one was a surpriser for me.
I think so too. Yeah, I have no great affinity for whatever her name is, Dushku, Eliza. Dushku. Yeah, that one.
Dushku,
not necessarily top-notch acting talents in my book. But that movie really, I think, was far more entertaining than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And that is what they are setting up in this film. The locale. This whole film only has four locations. It's got a gas station. It's got their cabin. It's got a lumber mill and a pond.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's where everything happens. But all four of those places. But yeah,
that's just kind of the in-between.
The woods in between. All of those places sell the idea that we're about to watch mutant hillbillies murdering countless college kids. But right. That's not exactly what
the
we get.
The difference is Dale is basically the Chris Farley of hillbillies.
That's true. Yes, that's true. And you're making my lady mad again because she does not like Chris Farley, but she loves Dale.
I hate her. I love Chris Farley.
With those locations, they do an incredible nod to so many genres, you know, from the opening sequence where you get that slight nod to Blair Witch and, you know, you get your Leatherface, you know, you get your Jason, you get your Evil Dead little hints and nods in there.
Yeah. Fargo with the wood chipper going down. I thought was pretty cool. Even Evil Dead 2, there's kind of a tribute scene where it's towards the end, so I'm not going to go into too many details right now because we're just starting off on this thing. But where Dale is, we'll say, preparing himself, and it's very reminiscent of when Ash is getting his chainsaw strapped on.
Damn straight.
Leather straps tightened down, the whole nine yards. And it was obvious that this movie was made not only by somebody who pretty much knew what he was doing and from the get-go had a vision and wanted to go after it, but also by a fan. I mean, yeah, a huge fan of the genre.
They loved the genre. Yep.
For sure. And I think that makes all the difference. Because you'll have some really big names come in to make horror films thinking they can, you know, get a quick cash cow or capitalize on a certain trend. But you can tell if this is their first foray, really.
Yeah.
It reads on screen for sure. But back to our college kids. So our college kids who have come to the woods just to have a hangout and smoke some weed, drink some beers, have another run-in with Tucker and Dale at the gas station, which doesn't go so well, because Dale takes he takes a little shine to one of the purdy college girls.
Well, and he doesn't go well because he took Tucker's advice.
It's true. And decides he's going to give it a go to go and have a chat with her and talk her up a little bit and maybe get his woo on. But he does so with a scythe and some of the most
smile and laugh.
Awkward smiling and laughing you've ever seen and scares these kids to death again. So I think it's safe to say that by the second meeting, these kids are pretty much sure these hillbillies are going to murder them.
Yeah, and at this point, you start getting an idea of what the film's trying to do. Because they're saying, okay, look, man, here's some hillbillies. And at the beginning, we introduced you, like, these are the crazy hillbillies. You know they're going to be the murderers. And then as the next couple of scenes unfold, it says, well, no, actually, they're really kind of more human beings that are awkward. And if you look at them from, like, a victim's point of view, then you can start seeing some misinterpretations. So when Dale comes up and, he's just holding the garden tool. Mm-hmm. And, he's trying to talk to a pretty girl and Tucker advises him, oh, just smile and laugh, And he stands up with this freaking scythe and is like, you're going camping, huh? That's creepy, right? Hey, just from their view. But they don't hear the backstory or the back dialogue. And you're like, I see what they're going to do with this film.
Totally.
And turn it on its fucking ear.
Totally do. What I love about the college kids is from the get-go, we do see them as just innocence in this whole thing. And like you said, some confusion and just, miscommunication and misperceptions at these hillbillies. But as the movie goes on, of course, that changes a little bit and we see a little bit more of them. But what I love about it is that their names are not important. Yeah. Nothing about the college kids is important. And as a matter of fact, through the entire film, they are referred to basically as, hey, college kids.
Yep.
which is also like another nod, I think, and at least a deft stroke of the pen that's the way all these characters are in a traditional horror film when they are being hunted down by hillbillies. Yeah, sure, we kind of care, but we don't really. They're just college kids to die in a film. So I like that they were able to eventually in this movie switch the roles, but also keep them pretty much the same.
Yeah, because, everything that these two do is actually quite innocent. Everything that Dale and Tucker do, it's very innocent. But it looks typical of horror from a different person's perspective.
Totally.
Hell. Like we were talking earlier, maybe Jason, maybe Michael Myers, man. Maybe these guys were just misunderstood, man.
If we were just on the other side of the lens,
right,
would we take all of these movies completely differently?
Yeah.
Well, and I love that. And that's what I love about something like Cabin in the Woods or Behind the Mask. Have you seen Behind the Mask?
No.
Rise and Fall?
I haven't seen that either. I
assume you weren't talking about Jim Carrey.
It's not the Jim Carrey one. It's a film about a slasher. So it exists, this film does, in a world where Michael Myers happened and he's been in the news and he did all those things in Haddonfield. And it exists in a world where Freddy Krueger really terrified a Springfield and where Jason really, went through a New Jersey campground and did these things. These are true things. They're on documentaries about these mass killers. Well, Leslie Vernon has self-stylized himself as, I am going to be the next great slasher. And a documentary crew is following him around to document his journey. So he does intense amounts of cardio and then jokes while he's doing it all. You guys have no idea how hard it is to catch someone running while you're looking like you're walking. He goes through the entire process with them of how he selects his final girl that has to survive this film, and she has to have a certain group of friends that you can pick off one at a time that's going to play a certain way. And so it was just like this film, a really cool look at things from the other side of the lens. However, it didn't go even as far as Tucker and Dale does, where it switches any roles. He still was going to be a slasher and they were still going to just be despicable kids like in any other movie. So I think, man, this film just goes that extra bit that sets it totally apart. I love the college kids, again, because they're completely anonymous. They're completely non-important. They're really not. But they are also timelessly stereotypical.
There's love to hate them.
Yeah.
Because they're so dumb.
Exactly. Which happens in a traditional
Every slasher movie has just like this collection of idiots.
I gave them some nicknames. Pop Collar, because there's a preppy college kid that has Pop Collar. Sleazy was what I call the girl in the short shorts, because she's run around the woods in platform shoes and almost nothing on.
Yeah, I think in the film, they're having a dialogue where they're like, hey, we can't escape because, you know, Pop Collar sent, you know, whatever the other name was, sure. away with the truck. And she's like, well, we need to just, you know, walk back. And she's like, for 40 miles? And she's popped off with, well, you should have thought about that before you dressed in your stripper shoes.
That's right.
And that was fucking brilliant.
But it is great. There's a really dumb one. So he's that Box of Rocks character. There's the white rapper.
How do you differentiate which one's the dumb one?
There is one. It's the guy they send for help, and he decides to go because it's my dad's truck, and I'm the only one supposed to. Yeah, so there is a dumber one, I guess we should say. There's the opinionated rich girl, of course. There's some dude in puka shells, which, woof. Jason, the character Jason, he's the guy that the first time we meet him, I think might even be the first lines he says. They're sitting around a campfire, and we come in a cutscene from something with Tucker and Dale, and he's asking them, hey, if I have a dream where I suck a dick, but I wake up and, like, don't do it in real life, is that make gay?
I've wondered that myself.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this movie answered it for me.
Does it have an answer?
So I'm good.
He's also the guy that when they all decide to go skinny dipping, and everyone's like, yeah, let's go. Hey, I'm going to go. And they're all hooting and hollering. All you hear from him is he goes, I'm not getting naked. So this guy's got some issues. But he's also supposed to be, like, the badass. Like, he's the tough one. He's the one throwing around all the threats and posturing and everything. Mm-hmm. So I thought his character was hilarious.
But he never acts on it. He's all talk.
Not at all. Well, I actually, in my notes, I have him written down as see-through badass, because you see right through him and just see he's all posture. But anyways.
So let's talk about that skinny dipping part for a second.
Yeah.
So we've picked a couple of movies, you know, to watch already. And I think one of there's a certain qualification for a horror flick, which I'll get into in a second.
Okay.
But the skinny dipping thing. Do you notice something funny about that?
You didn't get to see boob, did you?
We know
that might have been a thing. That might have been a thing.
Were you upset that the bras were on?
I was upset. We've done a couple of movies, right, that we've reviewed, done podcasts on.
Yeah.
No boobs yet.
No.
I want to know who's picking these movies, man.
It actually, surprisingly, was not me.
Yeah. You need to have a talk with your man, because that was a poor call, man.
Should we just blame this on Juan?
He chose poorly.
But
even more so than that. I kind of, you know, it's the middle of the day, right? Hey, let's go skinny dipping. And then fucking like 8 hours later.
They
show up at the pond midnight. It took them like 8 hours to take their clothes off.
Maybe they had to drive to the pond. Maybe the pond's on the other side of the county. We don't know.
No, because they ran. They ran.
Because they ran back to the
maybe
campground.
They ran for 3 days and we just don't know that.
I'm
trying to help you out here, filmmakers. That was a little odd.
Sure,
that
it went pretty good if she ran for 3 days.
Right. Yeah. Stripper shoes.
So we've got two problems right out of the gate. I love this movie. Don't get me wrong.
Totally.
Promise of skinny dipping. What the fuck?
Yeah.
No boobies.
Okay.
And it took 8 hours for them to undress.
Lee, do you want me to Google some boobies for you? Will that make you feel better?
I got tentacle porn.
You know,
there weren't
boobies, but you did get what's her name? Katrina Bowden. Katrina Bowden plays Allison. Allison Alley is the most non-despicable of the college kids.
Yeah, she's the one that they gave a face to, a humanity to.
Sure, and she's your final girl, and you know it from the get-go. She's the one that Dale wants to go and talk to because he's got a little crush, a little hillbilly crush. And yeah, she's not bad to look at. So, you know, I know you didn't get what you wanted, but the movie delivers. I mean, it does deliver.
Yeah, I mean, she was in some short shorts when she was getting into the water, and that was great. Yeah.
She went on to be in Piranha 3DD.
3DD.
Yeah.
Yes, so sir, she did.
Funny. I don't think she delivers what you're after in that film either, but...
Probably not.
Yeah. Well,
there was always that one.
For the Sci-Fi Channel, so they can kind of keep a check.
2011, she was actually voted Esquire magazine's sexiest person of the year.
She's got that girl next door.
You spent a considerable amount of time Googling her, didn't you?
Well, I do some research.
Uh-huh.
No, I think that's actually from this film, is because this film kind of catapulted her, and it came out just before that, and so, I mean, you know, she's one of the main characters by the end of this thing. And
yeah, and I think she did some really good, serious television, too.
Oh, 30 Rock.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she got a regular gig on 30 Rock.
I never watched that.
Yeah, I don't watch that show either. Sorry, everybody. I know we're, like, talking about all these... big cult phenomenon.
We're really bad at watching TV. We just watch a bunch of horror movies. Yeah, we
pretty much just watch horror movies and usually not the popular ones.
But that's what's so cool about it is that you can see, like, there's a thing in Hollywood where everybody says you get your start in a B-movie.
Yeah.
And then you get to trace that forward and see, you know, what then either became of them or didn't. Like Linnea Quigley, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Just stayed B-movie, but became a legend of B-movies. You know, one of her first, I think, roles that really propelled her was Return of the Living Dead.
Sure.
Might have been even earlier than that. But anybody that knows B-movie, they know Linnea Quigley.
Oh, yeah. Night of the Demons. Yep. Juan was over here. We were watching some horror movies just last week, I think it was. And for some reason, we were watching Sorority Babes and the Slimeball Bolo-rama.
Yeah.
Again, here's the movies we're watching, everybody. So now you know why we're not watching 30 Rock. We have other things to do. But we're watching that film, and we got on a Linnea Quigley kick. And so we start just running through everything. We're like, oh, Return of the Living Dead 2, and oh, Night of the Demon, and we're throwing them all in. Because she is a staple.
Yeah. She's the queen of the bees, which I believe is a title that's been given to her.
I think I've heard that, yeah. Yeah.
Sure. So it's really fascinating to me to see. Like Johnny Depp, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
That little bitch.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
He got a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Courtney and now Cox. Look at him. Courtney Cox, or not. Yeah, Courtney Cox did. Now I'm not remembering what film, but.
Scream. No, that wasn't the first one.
Who's Jennifer Aniston? Sorry, that's where I'm trying to go.
Yeah, Leprechaun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Courtney Cox got her start.
I was saying, because Courtney Cox was in Scream early on, but not that wasn't her first.
It wasn't her start, yeah.
I think Courtney Cox, and this might just be a little bit of urban legend, I don't know, but okay. She was the girl that was pulled up on stage on Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA.
Oh, cool.
In his video, and that kind of, from what I hear, launched her.
Huh.
Short cropped hair.
George Clooney, I think, got started in horror films. So many people did.
Yeah.
Kevin
so
Bacon.
So many people. Oh, yeah, Kevin Bacon, Friday the 13th.
Oh, Jesus Damn Christ. Yeah. I was like, I don't know, fucking 12 or something like that when I first saw Friday the 13th. And that arrow through the neck scene.
Oh, yeah.
That was my thing. That was what got me.
Savini's calling card at that time. And I think, honestly, to this day, that still kind of is, just because nobody was doing that at that time with just full rigging and prosthetics like that.
That's what's so beautiful about this movie here is that it's a callback to those. And nobody was doing that kind of stuff. Even the horror movies that you watched back mm-hmm. in the 70s, you know, even the Peter Cushings and the Vincent Prices were brilliant in their way, but they weren't the slashers. You know, you didn't start seeing some of that stuff until the late 70s, I think, and early 80s. And that became a whole new thing. So
yeah, Bay of Blood and some of those that
I Spit on Your Grave. I mean, stuff you'd never heard of before.
Good stuff indeed. So where we're going with all this is basically these college kids go skinny dipping. Allison climbs up on a big old rock and strips herself down a little bit and captures the attention of Tucker and Dale, who are doing some night fishing.
Yeah, innocently. Just
minding their own business, mm-hmm. staring at the undressing college girl. And I can't remember who it is that yells out, but one of them yells out to her.
So Dale was covering his eyes because Dale is the good boy. He's too nice for his own good.
He's a decent hillbilly.
Tucker, like any other man, was watching the college student in her underwear,
mm-hmm.
hoping that she would also take her bra off, likely.
And part of
and so Dale yells, "Tucker!" Because he was scolding him for looking at the college girl.
That's
right. Scared the shit out of Allison. She falls off the rock, hits her head, and goes under the water.
And sinks.
Yeah. Doesn't come back up.
There you have it right there, Lee. That's why you did not get any boobies. It's Dale's fault.
God damn it.
It was headed that way.
Or is it Tucker's fault for being ugly?
We'll blame them both.
So, never trust a hillbilly when it comes to the boob shot.
Apparently not. There's some words of advice
from all of you. Write that down. The good boy had to save her.
Yeah, so they pull Allison out of the water. They bring her into their boat. And as they paddle away, they stand up, turn around, and yell, "Hey, college kids, we got your friend."
Which is another perfect example of the content of how this is taken.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's the moment right there where it really sinks into the college kids, their reality of things, which is, oh, my God. these hillbillies are now...
There's some murdering...
Coming after us, yeah. Oh, and I think Dale's giving her mouth-to-mouth.
Yeah, which one of the friends mentions later on. She's like, one of them was eating her face!
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's totally that game of just perspective.
Yeah.
And they're trying to be do-gooders.
So well.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
So that kicks into gear what the rest of the film does. And we're not going to go scene by scene through this thing, because some of this stuff you just have to see for yourself, because it's... hilarious.
Yeah, that's why this was such a tough movie to talk about, because of these spoilers right out of the gate. Like, part of the joy is like discovering these, I see what they're doing here.
And moments. I don't think you need to know all those little hooks to know that you want to see this movie. I think you just need to know how well crafted it is, and then you're just going to go for the ride. But these kids are now sure that these hillbillies have come for them and are going to start picking them off one at a time. So they start to become a little bit more militant and a little bit more aggressive, because they now think they have to take it upon themselves to take on these hillbillies and rescue their friend. And this doesn't go the way they have it planned.
Doesn't go the way anybody thinks it's going to go. What I love about this fact is that they also play on the one thing that you always see, and that is like, go get help.
Yeah.
They always say, hey, let's go get the police. And they're like, no, we don't need the police. We can handle this ourselves. You know, classic blunder.
Oh, totally.
What the fuck?
They do every classic dumb thing, and it ends horribly for them. It's hilarious.
And like, we do know there is just... at least one police person that could help them. Because we ran into him at the beginning of the movie, and he is yet again a perfect stereotype of horror film.
And the small town cop.
Yeah, he pulls them over on this mountain road because they have a taillight out, or turn signal, whatever it happens to be, and catches them in a certain situation that we'll leave for you guys to see. But as he's talking to Tucker and Dale, and they've got open containers in this car, they're caught in a... Well, I'll just get to it. Basically, Tucker's driving, drops his beer in his lap. Dale leans over to try to clean it up, gets his shirt stuck underneath the seat, and appears to be pleasuring Tucker. And as he sits up quickly, when the cop walks up to the window, his shirt rips off, which makes things look even a little more odd. And then Tucker, of course, casually tells this law enforcement officer that they're headed to their new vacation cabin because Dale's been striking out with the ladies, and he's pretty sure some man time will set him straight. So this is the situation that this cop has walked into. But in true horror movie family, he doesn't, you know, even talk about any of this stuff. What he says to them upon learning where they're driving to is, there ain't nothing up there but pain and suffering on a scale you can't even imagine. Thereby filling the role of that you're all doomed character from a Friday the 13th. And goes about his business. He's literally injected just to give us that piece of horror trope, and I love that.
So does that mean that the place is cursed? Is there some mysticism going on there that they don't really tell us about, or is
I think they give you a little Evil Dead nod there, where you're like, well, maybe it is the cabin and things like that.
Because really, if
it's not a stupidity.
College kids, sorry guys, and hillbillies just chatted, we wouldn't have a movie.
No, not at all. Well, to further set the mood and kind of the attitudes of the college kids, there's a scene where they're sitting around their fire. This is right before the skinny dipping. And Pop Collar, the kind of lead college kid named Chad,
douchiest of the bunch.
Seriously, huge douchebag, decides that he is going to tell this sordid story that really happened right here on these grounds. And this story is about a couple hillbillies who also came upon a group of college kids who were out for a good weekend and brutally murdered them all but one left alive to tell the tale. So we have that. Then we have them arriving at their cabin when they see a wall full of news clippings. And I think it's made clear to us that something really did happen up here, and maybe that's what the cop is feeding off.
Yeah.
That just, there's been some bad urban juju
legends and some bad juju
up there. But the way he delivers it so seriously and so over the top.
Which was pretty cool, too, because then, you know, you get kind of this buildup of characters. You get a little bit of of fun. But then they dive right into this flashback where you, those people that want some blood and guts, they get it.
Yeah.
They get a little bit of blood and guts, and it's kind of cool.
Blades into faces.
Yeah.
And all sorts of good stuff. But, yeah, I mean, even with the gore that they do have in this film, it never gets over the top.
Well, and it's clever, too.
For sure.
And this is probably going to be a spoiler, but I think one of the greatest things when you first started seeing, again, how they were going to take the direction of the film is the chainsaw scene.
Yep.
Here you got a hillbilly. He's fixing up his home, man. He's got his dream home, so he's doing some repair work. Mm-hmm. He's out there chainsawing some logs. And at this point, the college kids are like, holy fuck, they've got our friend,
mm-hmm.
right? We need to go rescue her. We need to find out what's going on.
So they're just trying to nurse back to health.
Right. She exactly.
She knocked herself out, was she unconscious all night. Out.
They dove in, saved her, risked their own lives, and they'd let the college kids know, hey, we got your friends. Come get her, you know.
Mm-hmm. Totally above board.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, top notch for Hillbilly Protocol.
Sure.
And, of course, college kids are like looking at it the whole wrong way. So they decide to go check out this place. And one of the guys, I think they rock, paper, scissors to find out who's going to go up front and knock on the door,
like,
or whatever.
Something like that, yeah. It was kind of a voluntold situation.
Voluntold, yeah.
You are the weakest link. Go, bitch.
And he goes up there, and in the background, you know, Alan Tudyk's chainsawing some lumber.
Yeah.
And it's an old log that has a beehive in it.
Mm.
Right, of course, naturally.
And why would it not?
Fucking cuts right through that beehive. Bees come out. He comes freaking out, wielding the chainsaw like Leatherface.
Oh, yeah.
Running around the front of the cabin while this college kid is sneaking up to it. What does he see? He sees a crazy chainsaw man coming at him, flailing the chainsaw around. He takes off running. Alan Tudyk takes off running in the same general direction because he's trying to outrun the bees. College kid's trying to outrun the crazy chainsaw guy. Next thing you know, boom. College kid isn't paying attention to where he's going. Impales himself on a broken branch out of a tree. And then you know, okay,
right through the chest.
The college kids are going to start dropping.
Oh yeah,
and it's going to be because of some crazy ass misunderstanding, like weird schlep rock, you know, scenario kind of shit.
And that moment is so awesome. There's a Chariots of Fire moment where they're both running as fast as they can through the woods, but Tucker has kind of caught up alongside the college kid because he's not chasing him. College kid's just running straight as fast as he can. But they look to the side to see each other.
Yep.
And their eyes match for just a second. And you can see on the college kid's face, hey, wait, what's he doing over there? Not behind me trying to kill me. And you can see on Tucker's face, what the hell is this college kid running from? And then next second, college kid's pierced through the chest with a 3-inch pointed stick and dies there as Tucker continues running on. I love when Tucker later is talking to Allison and says something to her like, yeah, I saw one of your friends in the wood, and he must be allergic to bees too because he was running like a bat out of hell.
Yeah.
Just so innocent. No idea that this kid is now, you know, spiked and dead. However, all the other college kids just come on scene to see a buddy of theirs.
Yeah, impaled.
Right. Impaled in the woods. Impaled
after the hillbilly.
Killed by a hillbilly.
Chainsaw chained him. Yep. Chased him through the woods.
And so this continues and goes on and on. And there's always some clever reason why these hillbillies can't let Allison just go find her friends. You know, oh, we left them a note. Or, oh, you know, we're going to go find your friends for you. Or, oh, they were here, but they went running off. Or,
yeah, and that was what's so funny. Dale was like, he brought breakfast to her, right?
Yes.
And fucking has this beautiful plate of breakfast. And she's just coming out of it. She's been knocked out all night and shit's in the morning. She wakes up. She's like, holy crap, where am I? I'm dressed in some hillbilly flannel shirt, you know.
Yep.
And he comes walking in with a fucking lovely plate of pancakes. And she sees him and she screams and he's like, oh god, you don't like pancakes, I'm so sorry, I'll fix you something else, you know.
Later comes back out with bacon and eggs.
Of course. Yeah, bacon and eggs afterwards.
He's a gentleman.
Yep.
And then so as he gets to talking with her, he's like, no, you can't leave because, you know, we told your friends where you were, and so we're just nursing you back to health, knowing that they're going to come over here and pick you up this morning.
Yep.
Right? Total innocence.
complete. And the kids do keep coming back, obviously for a different reason.
For murder.
They're still trying to save their fellow who they think
this
is
kidnapped. This is going to be a hard movie to talk about going forward because there's many great things.
And
now
we don't have to cover every little topic on here. But the thing is what keeps happening to them is things don't go their way, such as the one kid who tries to approach the door just to kind of take a look, see what's going on, gets scared, runs in the woods, gets impaled, and now he's dead. These sort of mishaps, let's say, are not uncommon for these college kids the rest of this film.
And a total joy to see them unveiled.
Yes. And each one of them is clever, a little bit better than the last. And the ones that aren't that clever, because there's one or two, but they are done with just such glee by these filmmakers. I mean, they're so happy to be sending these college kids to their like self-brought demise over and over again. So I think it's safe to say college kids' bodies pile up.
Yeah.
And Tucker and Dale don't
throughout the whole thing, the college kids are so convinced that these hillbillies are just these evil entity that are just out to murder them. But Tucker and Dale are too freaking dumb to be any sense of evil.
Hold on.
Which is why we have a second beer.
Which brings me to this
Aaron
beer.
Aaron randomly found,
surprise
I don't know
beer.
How long ago.
Wait, what's this?
So this is a beer that I've had sitting over my beer fridge for
it's
a while now.
Literally cold.
It's this beer is literally called Too Dumb to Be Evil. And I purchased a can of this beer because this podcast, Red Fright and Brew, started with me writing online reviews. And just writing a review and then writing a little thing of a beer right after it. And to be honest, it was mostly tied in by name and that sort of thing. And when I saw this beer, I said, I'm going to purchase this beer, Too Dumb to Be Evil, and I'm going to review Tucker and Dale versus Evil because these two guys literally are too dumb to be evil. This is the greatest beer pairing I've ever seen. Well, what I didn't realize was that this beer, which is from Against the Grain Brewery, is a collaboration with Three Floyds, and it was a one-off, a limited edition. So by the time I got around to it, I didn't want to be recommending to people a beer that they couldn't go
get.
Find.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, what's the point in that? That being said, Grace has segued into this just about as awesomely as can possibly happen.
It was
so,
too perfect not to
had
mention.
Me.
Right. So we're going to crack this can open. And again, this is Against the Grain and Three Floyds. I mean, I absolutely, one of my favorite beers on earth.
You better kill your last beer.
I got to kill this.
Yeah, don't bitch bite that. Let's go.
But one of my favorite beers on earth is Three Floyds Zombie Dust.
You do love the zombies.
It is a 5 out of 5 beer for me. It is completely perfect. And I've not had anything else from them, actually, because I'm just on the wrong coast for such things. But
although we can get Against the Grain here, and Against the Grain does a menagerie of ridiculous beers. They have a beer called Brown Note, which totally has a guy with like a skid mark.
Oh, God.
And it's Heidi
Whitey's on the
good
front of it.
Beer too.
They're really good beers, but they're really like offensive and bizarre. Labels on
the
cans.
I like them already.
Yes.
They do one called Rico Sauvin or something like that has, it's like aged in wine barrels or something, and it has like grapes coming out of the guy's crotch out of his pants. Like, they're really weird cans, but they make really solid, really good beers.
Totally.
And they actually are something that we can get in the Northwest on like Three Floyds.
So this is a lager then, not an IPA?
They call it a fest lager, a festival
lager.
I'm
a little excited about that.
Which, looking at it, I'm thinking it's kind of done in the style of like an Oktoberfest lager.
I want to say it probably came out in the fall, and then when I discovered it, it was probably, oh gosh, when did I start writing those reviews? Well, I started writing the reviews back in November, October last year. So I'm guessing when I discovered it, it was late in the year, maybe early this year. So it has just been chilling here in my beer fridge. So it's not going to be top-notch, but we'll see
it's
how it goes.
Hey, does that mean we get
so it's
a second treat then? Not only just a second beer, but a second Deanne's Dose of Reality?
Oh, snap.
Maybe we should. Are you up for it?
So basically, this is done in the style of a fest beer. So a traditional,
it's
like, Oktoberfest beer, a Marzen.
Boy, it's malt up front. It's got a great
like the description
sweetness.
On the back says, bet you didn't see this coming. This is our riff on a fest beer. It's hopped up but malty. Enjoy for the rest of the story. Stay tuned. So basically, it's kind of done in the style of like a hoppy amber.
Okay.
So it's slightly hoppier than a traditional German fest beer, but...
Well, she took a big sniff and her face basically said, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, it's very mild.
Very mild.
If there's any hops in here, they're mild.
Well, have a sip. Tell us what you think.
They're mostly bittering hops, not a lot of aroma.
It tastes bitter. A little bit. The back end is like a rubber tire.
Rubber tire. There you go. Rubber tires.
Nice.
This you know what? I think I would and drink a rubber tire every day might... over a diaper.
Pine needle.
Some
pine needle
diaper. Stored in a diaper too long.
Yep. I'm sure it is. Yeah. And again, I'd have to do some research.
Less tire, but...
I didn't do any research whatsoever. I just said, hey, we're finally doing this movie I was going to do a long time ago.
Let's you know, this to me, this speaks Dale and Tucker more than the dynamic duo. This would be something they'd be drinking,
that's just because it's malty and you don't like IPAs.
Yeah, that's why. Come on, man.
I reject your reality and substitute my own.
Well, mm-hmm. You know what? I might have to agree with them because all we see them drink is PBR. And at one point, I was like pretty sure I saw an Olympia can. Uh-huh. I think they in did. The car, I think they're the drinking Olympias. Just says
beer really big, but yeah, they're totally Olympic.
It was, okay.
Hey, PBR is also great for bee stings.
Oh, yes. Lee loves to talk about his gags, but this time I'm going to jump on the gag reel, gag train.
Sure.
Gag-a-thon.
A-thon? Yeah, gag-a-thon. Sure. Sounds like my college years.
My favorite one in this was Tucker's penchant for pouring beer on his injuries.
Yes.
So oh,
yeah, I forgot about that.
In the bee scene, when his face is completely stung to death and he's got large boils and swollen areas, I mean, he starts to look like a crazy hillbilly mutant from the woods, mm-hmm. which doesn't help matters with, no, with not the at college all. Kids. But his first reaction is he goes to the cooler, cracks PBR, pours it all over his face. And I was watching a special feature or an interview or some kind of featurette earlier, and apparently that was ad-libbed.
Oh, God.
That was not in there. That's just something that Tudyk decided to bring to the role that just...
That's some of the best stuff is that improv shit.
Oh, for sure.
Dale did that when he went and... spoke with Allie at first when he walked back. Mm-hmm. That was another thing he did. It wasn't in the original script. He was like, they'd hate my face.
Oh, that, yeah, which is like hilarious because that's one of the first lines that like I really kind of chuckled and laughed and was like, oh, because that's not something you expect a hillbilly to say. Oh, they hate my face.
He's very self-conscious.
Oh, very much so. But he also, well, I don't want to give away what happens, but there's other grievous injuries which Tucker tries to fix.
Larger, Lord. More ridiculous injuries that he tries to fix with a PBR.
Pouring beer on them, which is absolutely fantastic. And for all I know, works perfectly. So I'm going to start trying that maybe. But the other running gag.
PBR has its place, but I don't know that that's recommended.
No healing properties, perhaps?
I'm going to go with probably nope.
All right. Well, I'll go with a Ranier then.
I don't know that a run is going to be. I think did I would go for like a thesaurus higher
for your birthday?
A thesaurus?
Yeah, you used Trout.
Those are extinct, and right?
And Ranier. And
okay. Some other... I say Ranier simply because I am... Because
you're classy as shit.
Bilingual, and I can French up several words like Tarjay and Ranier and... Hootenanyay.
No, you're done.
No, okay.
No more words. Drink your beer.
One of my other favorite running gags in this is the are you okay?
Hmm.
Everybody gets asked, are you okay? Someone, well, see, again, I'm going to have to give away all sorts of stuff, and I don't want to do it. And, you know, I'm guessing that a lot of people listening to this right now have already seen this film, and they're like, just say it, I've already seen it. But for those of you out there that haven't, we'll just say grievous things befall several people, and...
They're most definitely not okay.
Yes, and not just Tucker and Dale, but others mm-hmm. will instantly go to the, are you okay, when it's glaringly obviously they're not. And for some reason, this is hilarious to me. And every time they were doing it, I was just rolling.
So, now this may be jumping ahead, but I got to tell you, the one thing after watching the film that I walked away with was they gave it up at the end. They weakened out at the end.
Hmm.
I felt that the movie was fantastic up until their big reveal at the end. And I was like, oh, well, that's just...
The reveal? Like the twist or the wrap-up? Like just the final moment?
Yeah, okay, not the final moment. Got it. So right. We knew that, you know...
Sure.
Dale's going to get the girl. Okay. It's just it's the way it is.
Way to ruin.
Oh, God, spoiler alert. Dale gets the girl, everybody.
Jeez.
Damn. Well, we might as well let it out of the can now. She grew up on a farm, so she's a secret hillbilly anyways.
Yeah, she
she's
was.
She's got some hillbilly there it
is. She was salt of the earth.
But the twist, huh?
Yeah, I thought that that was very, I don't know, formulaic, very something we've seen before.
It's predictable.
When you got a movie that takes wood chippers and chainsaws and digging your own grave shticks and present them in a way that is crazy and original and fun, and you don't see that coming because it's all based on your perspective. At the end, I felt like like they gave it up a little bit, like they ran out of steam or something. I didn't feel like it.
Maybe
they
fought too hard to have a surprise. I mean, they had already kind of turned everything on its head, so why deliver a very traditional surprise style kind of thing? Okay, I can see that. Yeah,
it was just a little twist.
Bit. You know, with the good, you got to have the you know the constructive criticism part of it.
Totally, I understand that. Well, and while we're talking about you know constructive criticism and mistakes that might have been made or shortcuts or shortcomings, this was written. And, well, co-written, I should say. I don't remember who the other writer was, but also directed by Eli Craig. And this was his first script for a feature and first directing for a feature. So for your first shot,
it's pretty damn
I'm
going to
be a little more forgiving on some things. And considering how much he nailed this, I'm going to give him a full pass on that end. But I do see what you're saying completely.
Yeah. No, it was in the end, it was a totally, totally recommended movie. Totally one of those ones you got to have on your shelf.
Sure.
Especially considering the crap that's continuing to come out there.
Oh, yeah.
Also, it's totally on Netflix right now.
Yes, it is on Netflix.
I don't know for how long. It's been on Netflix for a really long time.
It might be a staple at this point.
Go watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no excuse. Go check it out at your first convenience for sure. What I took away from this, and one of the things that was left with me, was the college kids build traps. For Tucker and Dale. The college kids make spears. The college kids shoot firearms at them. The college kids wield axes. The college kids try to saw people in half at a lumber mill. The college kids kidnap people and animals.
Oh, yes.
Or, what was his name? Jangers. Poor Jangers.
Puppy. Known as Wheezy, I think it is. The dog's real name is Wheezy, I think.
Dale has the most hillbilly of all slobbering giant dogs named Jangers. But the college kids send threatening messages. I mean, you see where I'm going here. The college kids fulfill all the requirements to be mutant, redneck, hillbilly zombies.
Yeah.
And do every one of them throughout the entire film. And I thought that was really cool. And it didn't dawn on me until actually watching it for this review. That never really clicked. Like, I got the role reversal. I got all that kind of stuff. But they literally did, to Tucker and Dale, all the things that
your typical would do. Your typical psycho killer would do.
Yeah, it was so cool.
And at some point, Dale and Tucker are aware that there's obviously a conflict and a war going on here.
Sure.
And they're like, oh, we need to go seek out the police. And even they turn it down. I'm like, no, the police ain't going to help us. Which is, again, another one of those things where everybody could just simply go to the police.
Yeah.
But
maybe they knew the...
Yeah, which may or may not have happened.
Of their police force.
True.
Yeah.
Also, Dale and Tucker didn't have all of the typical tools that a serial killer or psycho, you know, wood slasher would have.
Yeah.
The college kids had all of that, and they still horribly failed. And, you know.
Sure.
It's just a clever-ass movie.
I think, that's probably the best way to put it.
They put it together on so many different levels.
I can't recommend it high enough, you know. And again, I'm sure a lot of you guys out there, especially if you're listening to a horror podcast, you've seen it. But on that off chance you haven't, or even off the chance that you just haven't seen it in a while, man, go check it out again. Get a refresher on this one because it's just that good.
One of the things, too, is I think that's very cool to remember about this whole thing is it really is meant to give you a fresh look at and nod to the classics. Probably said that earlier on, but it strikes home every time I've watched it. I've watched it a couple times now just to, because the first time I watched it, I was like, holy crap, I need to watch it again now and actually pay attention to it for the, kind of the review, totally. Because I was just totally engaged and totally immersed.
So excited when we were, writing back and forth and I found out that you had never seen it before. I was like, oh, because it's harder to find that with a lot of movies, especially stuff that's on Netflix and stuff that is well received and kind of popular. It's harder to find someone that hasn't seen it, but I'm glad that I got to take your first notes on it.
Because I may not have seen a movie, but I've seen the premise before, So for a certain degree, people like us that are really into the horror and the sci-fi and things like that, we've seen it all before in that sense. So to find something unique in the modern decade is a real treasure.
Totally.
Something that redefines a genre.
For sure. And it makes you want to go watch the others. It was the same with after Shaun of the Dead. There was so many references to Day and Dawn and even Night that I immediately just wanted to go and watch all those again to relive the moments that they had nodded at or kind of recreated. And this is kind of the same way. I immediately want to go and watch A Wrong Turn to remember what it's like when the hillbillies really are, the bad guys and they're killing everybody. And to see it from that other side of the lens so I could kind of, like Grace was saying earlier, I could maybe vision these poor backwards people as the victims in some way. It's not going to happen probably in Wrong Turn now that I think about it.
But it does. It did make me want to go back and revisit the original.
Sure.
13, the original Evil Dead, the original,
Yeah, definitely. And that's a good compliment for a film when it nods to its predecessors enough and does a good enough justice to what it's trying to deliver that it excites you for things that, are older and almost, not forgotten, but just kind of considered standard at this time. And it makes you go, oh, I got to watch those again right now.
Well, what is it? What is it about horror? What brought you into it?
What brought me
into it? Do you get out of horror?
My story is a little convoluted on horror, but mine started because I was a very sheltered kid, very religious home, very restricted. And the funny thing about all that was that my mom, when she was younger, enjoyed horror films quite a bit. And when I say younger, I mean only maybe 3-4 years younger than when she had me. So she was watching some of what I now consider to be my favorite horror films, like when they were coming out in the theaters just a couple years before I was born. And she would love to tell me all about them and share with me the feelings of how scary they were and how dreadful they were and these atrocities are being committed in such, huge ways upon these poor innocent people. And it scared me to death because I wasn't allowed to watch them and reassure myself that they were fake, that they were not just, stories. So I think once I actually watched some horror films on my own, I realized how actually fun they were. And so I skipped entirely the part of watching horror movies that a lot of people had, which it scared them. I only had that in pretty much one horror film. And that was the very first one I can remember seeing, which was John Carpenter's The Fog. I think I was 9, maybe 8. And mom left me alone. I watched it on TV, didn't sleep for a couple of days. Someone knocked on the door. I peed my pants, that kind of thing. But I didn't have that gradual kind of discovery that a lot of people had because my mom had already told me all the stories and the tales. And I mean, she used to recount to me Michael Myers and walking through the hallways of the hospital in Halloween 2 and, piercing the nurse against the wall and her shoe falls
off.
Jesus
Christ.
But it was all done in kind of a fun, hey, we're driving around Lake Tahoe, in the middle of the night. And she's like, I'm going to tell him some stories. And I'm sitting over there, just kind of lost in my own mind and shivering a little bit because I'm a little scared. And so when I finally watched that movie and saw that scene, it was almost like the revelation of a tease or the end of a mission that she had put me on. So I didn't find those scary anymore. I was just like, oh, this is what she was talking about. I get it. Okay, it's great. So I went So I went pretty much straight from like sheer terror of the thought
to
like
the ghost pure story enjoyment. was more than the
Her stories were far scarier than I ever found the films, with the exception of The Fog, because that was literally the first one I watched, and I don't think she ever told me about it, and that one got me pretty good.
What about you, nice. Grace?
I did. Mine was a little different journey. So
yeah, because you were like sister. What 1 year old when most of these came up.
I have an older sister. She's a jerk. She's awesome, but she's a jerk. And she loved horror movies from the get-go. So she thought it was pretty fun to let her little sister, who was way too young to be watching these, watch The Exorcist and Silence of the Lambs in the same weekend.
Oh, Christ.
That's
child abuse.
We were at our dad's house, and he wasn't really paying attention. He didn't care. Whatever. Watch whatever you want. Terrible idea. I didn't sleep for a while. Exorcist scared the piss out of me when I was little.
Yeah, well, it should.
So then I am one of those, I am super stubborn.
Hold on.
Who knew? And I didn't like that something beat me. I felt like I lost because I got scared. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to be scared. So then it became this like vendetta for me. That I didn't want to be scared of a movie. That's stupid. That's not logical. I don't like that. So I just started watching tons and tons of horror movies until it finally got to the point where they no longer scared me. They were enjoyable for me.
Wow.
There you go.
I love
that. There's still some out there that will, you know, they'll get to me and they'll mess with me. But I like that now. I like the thrill now.
Like Leprechaun in the Hood, I hear.
That's right. Fucking scary.
Just
shit.
A little bit too much for you.
I cry a little bit every time from laughter. But, God, I love that movie. Sorry. Leprechaun movies make me giggle. But it was totally, it became this weird, oh, I'm better than this. I can fix this. So it just became this like bizarre. I'm really weird.
No, how fascinating. That's why I asked, because you know, we've known each other for a little while now, but I never really kind of knew what the connection to horror was.
We want to know the same. Why. So
and
let's.
Your turn, sir.
Mine, you know, goes back to when I was very young, and they had this thing.
What year was that?
1902, I think we established.
Okay.
No, it was Sinister Cinema, and it was this thing that I just happened to stumble across on a Saturday night, one night when I was staying up really, really late, and it was this guy doing a hosting show that he would then play like really old horror flicks, and so I saw my very first Wolfman and my very first Frankenstein. And so picture like, oh, I don't know, like Ramblin' Rod, the Ramblin' Rod show or a Pee Wee Herman show or something like that. But take that and have a host doing that with like a horror flicks genre.
Oh, yeah.
It was that kind of thing, like long before Elvira and whatnot. And so I found these taboo things that I couldn't watch because they didn't come on until midnight through Sinister Cinema. And that exposed me to the Universal Monsters at that time. And, of course, then when I saw a Creature, it was just like this full trifecta, and I was hooked at that point. Yeah. And so I really started seeking out, every time I could at a Saturday night, ways to stay up to watch Sinister Cinema and see what the next, you know, show was going to be. and I'd oftentimes request to go to my grandmother's on Saturday and stay the night there because my grandmother let me stay up if I could. And I'd get up at like 11:30 at night and just dozing off, and I'd get up off her couch and go into the bathroom and splash a bunch of cold water on my face just to stay awake. And I saw some great flicks from Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee and, you know, Vincent Price. And at the same time, I also discovered the Godzilla flicks. So that just from a really, really early age just gave me the appreciation of the classics, the things that really sort of established the foundation. For me, it was a very warm, enjoyable experience. Not at all fucked up and traumatized like you two crazies. So that, yeah, so that just really dove me into just loving it. And then there's a period of time where I didn't watch any horror flicks, and then I got introduced to Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
There was, I was more into like the Godzilla and the King Kongs and sure. things like that, and then I got back into Friday the 13th.
So that period enough. Of time was the late 50s to the late 70s.
let me indicate reruns, by the way.
Okay, good.
Which, on a side note, by the way, the original actor, Yuharu,
the guy who played Godzilla,
Nakajima.
Oh yeah.
Passed away last week. Just yeah, last so week. nod to him, man, because yeah. I dug me some Godzilla something
fierce. He was in 12 or 13 of those all the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, he was in more of them than anyone else. Yeah.
All the way into the 70s, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, and then it never left me, man. Then I love the horror. I love the sci-fi. And I'm always looking for something new, something that's going to change the genres. Like,
that's awesome.
You know, The Matrix. That was a movie that changed the genre. You know, in terms of the sci-fi.
For sure.
Things like that, you know, that's what I'm always looking for. I'm looking for that movie to scare me.
Nice.
To challenge me.
Well, we'll see if we can find it. But it looks like, just like our taste in beer, you know, we're going to have some differing opinions on some of these movies that we review. And I think that's going to be all the better as this goes on.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. Oh. I really look forward to all of the different changes and recommendations from you guys, beer recommendations, you know, even if it's another goddamn IPA.
We'll get off IPA for a minute.
I'll change it up.
Well, you mentioned The Creature a minute ago, so, and also recommendations, so I'm going to shoot one at you. Have you seen a trailer for Guillermo del Toro's new movie, The Shape of Water?
No.
It looks to be kind of his fairy tale take on a extremely creature-like creature. Can you say that? Creature-like yeah, creature?
You just did.
Yeah. Looks awesome. Check out a trailer for it. Everybody right. out there, if you haven't seen a trailer for Shape of Water, have a look at that. Plus, you know, Del Toro, it's going to be phenomenal and magical and all the other things he does so easily, it seems.
Well, I really love this because it's been a bit of a dry spell getting involved with, you know, the love and passion of my childhood. And so revisiting these now and actually having not necessarily a purpose, but having a reason to get together with friends and review these movies and watch them together and things like that.
It's going
to
be awesome.
Pretty damn cool.
Yeah, we're going to keep this going. So there you have it, everybody. I think that's about all we got for this episode. Be sure and catch us next time.
Blue, ha, 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 ha.